Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, man, we're packed today. Live in Los Angeles, which has been a little muggy lately. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, this is The Herd. Fox Sports Radio, FS1, right here. Joy Taylor is joining me. I'm all fired up today. I've got a lot of things on my mind today. I'm not holding back, Joy. I usually hold back all the time. No more for me.
You usually hold back?
The new me, Joy.
Okay. I'm fired up, too. There's a lot going on. That was a great day of basketball, though, yesterday.
Great. I want to talk Mavericks and Clippers.
Okay.
So I think the Clippers are going to win the championship, and I think the Mavs are a really fun watch, but last night's why they're just a bunch of kids. But it was a prime example. So Porzingis, Kristaps Porzingis, very good player. He got ejected from the game last night. Now, it wasn't like, you know, the old real ejection where you swing at somebody and knock them down and they kick you out for a game. It was his second technical, and that's an automatic ejection. And that's a real thing here to discuss. Because Maverick fans were like, that's weak, weak referee. No. If you are one speeding ticket away from losing your license, I don't want to hear, well, I was only 9 miles an hour over the speed limit. No. You know what's funny about politics? You demand everybody. You don't want to hear about their childhood or their circumstances. You want to demand people are personally responsible. I don't care what's happening in their home. I don't care about their life. I don't care about their finances. Personally responsible. But yet, with your athletes, it's the ref's fault. No, it's Porzingis' fault. Got to be an adult. He knows the rules. We don't hold our athletes responsible, but we demand it from society with our politics. Kristaps Porzingis is smart. He knows it. The good news is he admitted it after the game. It was him, not the refs.
I saw him getting into Luka's face, and I didn't like that. That's why I reacted. That's a smart thing to do from their part. I just got to be smarter and control my emotions next time.
Of all the professional leagues, the NBA owners know it, the coaches know it, the GMs know it, they have seminars on it, the players know it, even the rookies know it, the trainers know it. This league is hyper-sensitive to fighting. My gut feeling is it's malice in the palace with such a black eye for the sport, they're hyper-sensitive. All leagues aren't sensitive. In hockey, Joy and I, you could watch a hockey game, the refs will let guys fight. They'll like let it get it until they can get their arms around them. They'll just let them go and throw haymakers. In baseball, not only can you leave the dugout, pitchers sprint in from the outfield to join fights. There's no penalty. In the NBA, if there is a skirmish and you are on the bench, if you leave a box a foot and a half in front of you, you're suspended for a game. If you leave the area in baseball, pitchers sprint 60 yards to join the fight. No fines or suspensions. In hockey, they're wrestling for a while until the refs can get the positioning, knock each other out, okay. In football, guys push, to trash talk. It's not the way it works in basketball. Again, personal accountability. Everybody knows the rules. You leave the box, you have game suspension. And that's the way the NBA has always been since Malice in the Palace. It's just, in fact, they have a term in the NBA. It's called escalator to the altercation. That's a term. If baseball was the NBA, you'd be thrown out for a week for sprinting toward the action. They have a term in the NBA for this. By the way, everybody knows the rules. I have seen LeBron James, one of the smartest basketball players ever, multiple times in his career during a skirmish. And what does LeBron do? He stays on the periphery. Because LeBron knows he's the best guy on the floor. Marcus Morris is involved in this. He's the seventh best Clipper. Porzingis is the second best Maverick. You've got to know how valuable you are, especially to a young team whose best player's 20. Luka. I've seen LeBron James multiple times, and I've heard criticism through the years. Like, why isn't he getting involved? Because he's super smart. If you're a James Harden, you're a LeBron, you're a Porzingis, you're a Giannis, and there's a skirmish, you can yell, you don't get anywhere near it, especially if you've already got a technical. If you're one ticket from your license being pulled, the responsibility now is not on the cop. It's on you. It's totally shifted. Totally, completely shifted. But I think it's remarkable how in our politics, we demand accountability. No excuses for our athletes. Ref's fault. It's not the ref's fault. Doesn't matter how weak that first technical was. Once you get it, the responsibility, the burden of responsibility is on you, the adult, to stay out of that. By the way, let's talk the game. The first quarter and the first half was all offense. So in the NBA, I've heard this criticism for years. All you got to do is watch the last 5 minutes. Well, last night was a great example. So the Mavericks are a bad team in close games, 2-12. The Clippers are a great team in close games, 8-3. That's not random or insignificant. That's everything. Because in the NBA, and I've been watching it for 40 years, playoff games are decided in the last 5 minutes. And the last 5 minutes of that game last night is why the Clippers won. Dallas doesn't know how to win those games. They've been lousy. I've watched Dallas play a dozen times this year. Half the games have been close late. I don't think they've won any of them. They outplayed Houston, I think it was, about 2 weeks ago, the whole game. Houston has Westbrook and Harden and Covington and veterans and beat them. You got last night, all you need to know is that there were multiple times, once on a fast break, where Luka is wide open and Seth Curry's throwing up a lousy three. Did you notice in the last 5 minutes how intense the Clippers' defense got? You could look at their body language. Did you notice in the last 7 minutes that Dallas, who had 14 threes up to that point, last 7 minutes, Dallas hit one three. Dallas got no freebies. Dallas got no cheapies. The Clippers played real defense. And in the fourth quarter, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard either scored and assisted on all but 4 points for the Clippers. That's why the Clippers won. My bad, 2 points. Paul George and Kawhi scored or assisted on all but 2 points for the Clippers. The Clippers are the better defensive team. It won the game. The Clippers didn't allow any good looks on three-pointers. That won the game. And the Clippers got it to Kawhi, and everything ran through Kawhi, and then Kawhi got it to Paul. He got it to Beverly. He got it to all his veteran players. That's why the Clippers won. That is why veteran teams like the Clippers are good in close games, and super talented young teams like the Mavs are bad in close games. There is a saying in sports, and it goes across all sports. Do you know how to win close games? It's not just talent. Do you know how to win them? Dallas doesn't. Last night, you got Seth Curry coming down the floor. Luka's wide open. Seth bad three. It's not the way it worked for the Clippers. Every possession, find Kawhi, and Kawhi looking for Paul or Patrick Beverly or Lou Williams, looking for all the veteran players on the floor. That's why. This is not random. What happened last night was not about a technical. It was about a really great player for the Mavs not taking personal responsibility and not understanding his value. And the second part was 5 minutes left in this game. The Clippers totally clamped down and said, okay, fellas, we're real close here. Let's clamp down. And this is why I think the Clippers are going to win the championship. You know, there's always been this saying in the NBA, you can't flip a switch. Well, yes, you can. I flip a switch every day. I'm having a coffee. I'm cracking jokes. I'm messing around. Light goes on. I flip a switch. Boom. Hit it. Let's go. Talk, talk, talk. Rant, rant, rant. Interview, interview, interview. And then when the show's done, turn it off. Go listen to music. Have a ham sandwich. I flip a switch every day. You flip a switch for work. We have different personalities. You don't have a different personality. There's having a glass of wine with your wife. There's, boss is coming into the room. Have to act a certain way. You act a certain way with your dogs and your cats and your wife and your kids and your bosses and the management. And we all flip switches. I've never bought into this. Well, you can't flip a switch. Life is flipping a switch. I mean, football players, you're literally tackling people violently at 1:30. At 4:30, you're cuddling with your infant baby. You flip a switch. We all flip switches all day. The Clippers are going to be fine. I don't buy into this whole, you know, the chemistry. Is Kawhi Leonard the best get a bucket, get a stop guy in the league? Yeah. Is Paul George an all-star? Yeah. Has Doc Rivers won a title? Yeah. Is Lou Williams the best sixth man? Yeah. Do they have young guys who can shoot? Yeah. Do they have big guys that can run the floor? Montrezl Harrell? Yeah. Do they have a great front office? Yeah. Is it a perfect roster? Pretty damn close. Best one in the NBA. So that game last night, that last 5 minutes is one of those classic. Watch the last 5 minutes again. If you go to YouTube or wherever you can get it, watch the intensity of the Clippers defense get really tight. No more free looks, and watch how everything with the Clippers offensively, it was just like, it reminded me of Michael Jordan. It was just like, all right, it's just Michael's not the point guard, but Michael's gonna, everything's gonna run through Michael. Everything ran through Kawhi. Get ready, Clipperland. Start stacking those championship trophies. Get ready for it. It's a weird one. It's a bubble trophy, but it's still a trophy. Coming up next, why the Blazers are the opposite of the Mavericks and the Lakers should be absolutely concerned. That series starts tonight. That'll be a great one.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Do-it-yourself projects at Lowe's. Show us your transformation. Hashtag Lowe's goals. Very good. I just finalized my bar cart. It's good to have you in today. A lot of sports, playoff action. Very, very exciting. So the Lakers and Blazers play tonight. So the Clippers got it easy with Dallas. They really did. Dallas is young, inexperienced. They don't have, you know, their best players never been in the playoffs before. They're not great in close games. You know, I mean, like, that's perfect. For a veteran team like the Clippers, Dallas can challenge you. I mean, it's not a walk in the park, but in the end, it's a perfect team to open up with. They don't play real defense. They're not good in close games. They don't have any playoff experience. The Blazers are everything Dallas is not. Since January 1st, the Blazers are 9-2 in close games. They're better than anybody. Damian Lillard, this is his 52nd playoff game tonight. Last night was Luka and Porzingis' first. Portland in the fourth quarter can be devastating because they get everything through Dame, who's also one of the league's best ball handlers, and he controls the tempo. I mean, Portland is really just one wing defender from being a nightmare for the Lakers because Portland's got veterans. They've got men, not kids. They've got experience. They got toughness. They have situational excellence. Dallas is young and fun and loose and... But they're like a cake that you pull out of the oven, and it's still gooey. You look at it, and you're like, oh, you cut it open. You're like, oh, it's batter. I can see batter. That cake, that Dallas cake, you got to put it back in the oven for about another year. Portland's different. You pull the Portland cake out of the oven, it's just a little better icing from being perfect. They if they just had a 6'7 wing like a Trevor Ariza, doesn't opt out and plays, they're a nightmare. They've got star guards. Stars, three-point shooters. They've got wing scores, backcourt, Nurkic, big size. They got everything. Dallas is the perfect opening round match for the Clippers. Challenging? You have to get your defense right because they can shoot. But late in games, no threat, no playoff experience. The Blazers are a nightmare. They're a nightmare. They got everything. They got the size. They got the veterans. They got the playoff experience. They got a veteran coach. I think it's going to be a great series. I do think the Blazers look a little gas to me. They certainly did Saturday. They just can't ratchet up their defense. They can't put away teams. They can't make stops. And I think they're tired, and I think the Lakers are well-rested. But it's a real – this is as good, potentially, as a first-round matchup gets. This is what the NBA – when you get this, LeBron said it, that Portland shouldn't even be classified as an 8 seed.
That playoff experience, and you can't try to outscore them because they can score with the best. But they're not your typical eighth seed. I'm not going in as a one. It's a one seed versus eighth seed I'm going in with. This is the Lakers versus Portland. I've already thrown that out of the window. So I won't be going in with my guard down.
Dame and Nurkic are probably two of the top, 25 players in the league? Maybe two of the top 20? So it's a real battle tonight. Anthony Davis and LeBron may be two of the top five, but we got a real battle on our hands. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
Well, things got off to a very exciting start yesterday.
Yeah.
The Nuggets Jazz game was the best game.
It was crazy.
Of the day.
Not a lot of, you know what's funny about this bubble? The offense has shocked us how good it is. The defense is, at times, regrettable.
The one thing about the bubble that will occasionally happen is, and it happened in this game, there'll be a little bit of a kind of goofy sequence where like everyone will miss.
It's a
for,
mess.
Like, 2 minutes straight.
A little YMCA.
Turn it over. Yeah, it gets a little, how they call it yesterday, LA Fitness at 3 p.m.
Yeah.
It gets a little crazy, but they got it together and it was an incredible game. Jamal Murray was huge late for Denver, scoring 20 of his 36 points, including 4 3-pointers in the fourth quarter in overtime. Jokic also recorded a double-double in the playoff opener with 29 points and 10 rebounds. And despite Donovan Mitchell's 57 points, which is the third most in any playoff game, the Nuggets held on to win 135-125. The Jazz just really didn't have anything left in overtime. Once they got to overtime, it was the Nuggets game. But Mitchell's 57 was also a career high for him. He's the youngest player since Michael Jordan to score at least 50 in a playoff game.
And by the way, he makes the effort on the defensive end. Donovan plays defense.
He hit 57 points, right? So it was like all you could keep your eyes on. Right. But while he's doing that, Jamal Murray's on the other end of the floor killing it too. It was just an incredible watch. This is going to be a really fun series.
You know, I feel the NFL and the NBA are really led now. I mean, there's a Tom Brady or a LeBron. There is so much great young talent in football at quarterback. And there is so much under 25-year-old talent in the NBA. I'll tell you something. Denver is about a year away. 1 year from now, if Michael Porter Jr. is as good as we think, he was the best high school player by a mile. This is a real team. They got like 6 real players in Denver and a very good coach, and they draft well and they find talent. They have overseas scouts. I mean, like, Denver is not going to get the publicity of Dallas because of Mark Cuban and Luka. Watch out for Denver.
Denver's really good. And the thing about it is that with this series, they're so well match. Like, I think this is going to be a long series. We're going to have a lot of really fun first round playoff series, which we usually never have.
It was
a really fun watch. A little more of a physical game was the Celtics and 76ers. Joel Embiid had 26 points and 16 rebounds last night, but it was not enough. Sixers lost game one to the Celtics 109-101, and after the game, Embiid says he needs to be a bigger factor for his team moving forward.
I got to do more. I got to, you know, I got one job to do, just to carry us. You know, I'm going to need my teammates to help me. But I got to do more. I got to take more shots. I got to be more aggressive. Defensively, I got to help my teammates.
He was kind of strange. Had kind of strange energy towards the end of that game.
He just didn't get enough touches.
Yeah, he scored 11 points on 5-for-5 shooting in the first quarter, but ended up with just 15 total shots in the game. Made 8-of-15. Jason Tatum had a playoff career high, 32 points and 13 rebounds.
He was
Jaylen
great.
Brown was incredible, 15 of his 29 points in the fourth quarter.
God, another great. Jason Tatum is great. He's just all he needs. He just, you know, he has an occasional dog game. Like, he'll have a game where he just kind of goes sideways, where the great players in this league, you kind of get the same game. 9 out of 10 games, it's the exact same game. Jason is just a little refinement. I get from me getting the same Jason Tatum every single game.
A little more consistency.
But boy, I'll tell you, 4 to 5 nights, he is he's another one of these guys. He's getting better every time you watch him play.
Well, the Celtics also scored 21 points off of Philadelphia's 18 turnovers. Yeah. So not a great game overall for Philadelphia. But look, I mean, we don't have very high expectations. Ben Simmons is out. Joel Embiid's going to have to carry this team. They're not going to make it past the Celtics.
Yeah.
And the Celtics did what they're supposed to do. The kind of dud of yesterday, but, you know, the Nets kind of made it a game a little while. They came back from down, I believe, 33. The Raptors.
I didn't get to see much of this. You watch it?
Yeah, the Raptors have been obviously red hot since the restart. They only lost one game so far in the bubble. They continued that against the Nets. Fred VanVleet led his team to the 134-110 win, scoring game-high 30 points and going 8-for-10 on three-point shots. The Raptors, as a whole, made 22 three-pointers, which matched the season high and tied their franchise record.
God, VanVleet's just getting... And whoever thought he was going to be this good? Siakam, you could tell, like, second year, you're like, oh, this is going to be special.
But this is kind of what the Raptors do. And this is why the Raptors are so dangerous, because VanVleet can go out there and do that. And just I know, obviously, look, the Nets are very undermanned and they've had a nice time in the bubble. But, you know, again, we were all taking the Raptors in this series. They were down 33 points at one point in the game. But the Raptors can rely on just one person. Like, they have such a great system and culture that everybody doesn't need to thrive, even if you know, the Nets are making a comeback. VanVleet said he felt the team was amped up and energized, and this is the most locked in that they've been all year. So they're in playoff mode. But just a lot of great basketball yesterday. Really fun.
Kawhi leaves, they don't miss a beat. And their young players are getting, like, the young players are both a notch better than last year.
I mean, they're going to miss Kawhi later in the playoffs. Yeah. Like, he's a superstar. You don't just replace him. But where they've picked off since he's left has been incredibly impressive.
Good stuff. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Senior writer, Bleacher Report, Fox Sports NBA analyst Rick Bucher now joining us. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. All right, why do you think Porzingis has been around this league for a while? Why do you think he got even? I mean, they have a term, altercation escalator. There's like, yeah. I was joking, in baseball, you can run in from the dugout. Nobody cares. In football, hockey, you let guys fight. In basketball, Rick, since the Malice in the Palace, like, that feels like the point the league said, none of this. Like, you can't even get involved in this stuff. Why do you think he went into that little huddle of that skirmish?
Kristaps has a reputation for being soft, and no one thinks that more than the Morris twins in particular and the Clippers in general. So this was very much, this is Porzingis' first time in the playoffs, and he wanted to make a point, hey, I'm not soft. Watch, I'm going to step in and I'm going to take up for my teammate Luka. And he picked the wrong time and honestly the wrong way to demonstrate that he's tough, because the fact of the matter is, simply the way he's physically built, you can wear him down and you can wear him out by being physical with him in the game. He doesn't really have an alternative to that. So this was his way of trying to make a statement, and it backfired on him.
Yeah. You know, the Mavs, four times this year, the Mavericks had more turnovers than assists, and this two of them are against the Clippers. And, you know, I could point to Luka and say, well, he's the point guard. He controls the tempo. Why don't you think they're better late in games? They're a bad, close game team in Dallas.
Well, this is, I believe, it is on Luka. And it is the question. And it's the reason why he wasn't, I thought he should be the number one pick. I believe that he was the best in the draft. But in terms of making him your franchise player as a point forward, and that's really what he is. We're calling him a point guard, but he can't defend point guards. You've got to switch him off on a big. He's playing the point forward position, and that is the most talented position in the game today, with LeBron and Kawhi and KD and Giannis. They're all considered point forwards. And the question was, physically, can he dominate? He's a very clever player.
Yes.
But you can force him to extend his game against the best of the best when he has to go up against a Kawhi or a LeBron or a Giannis. You can make the game hard on him, and you can see where he's trying to get to the same places, but he has to extend himself to get there, and that's what's created the turnover. So you know, some of the question about can he be physically dominant? We already know he has the talent and the experience, but he's always been a clever player, not a physically dominant player. And he's being tested by the best of the best at his position. And we'll see where that goes. Because the other thing that I've noticed is he's always banged up. He's got to extend himself and exert himself so much to make up for that physical deficiency that he's constantly getting knocked down or banged around. And you already heard Rick Carlisle singing that song to the referees that he's being played too physically tough and manhandled. Hey, this is the playoffs, and this is the way people are going to play Luka. And we'll see if he can make an adjustment to it.
Yeah. By the way, I don't want to hear from any NBA fans that about the fouls. My entire 40 years of watching the NBA, it's officiated differently in the playoffs. Referees get out of the way and they let you be more physical. If you can't adapt to it as a young team, that last year, Toronto got very physical. They had a lot of veteran players. That's the secret sauce. Now, here's what's interesting, Lakers Clippers. And you got to be careful about this. There's two or three things that have happened in the bubble. We've seen a bunch of young stars emerge. Michael Porter was unbelievable. Ja Morant. So that's one of the things. The other thing we saw in the bubble is, I don't know how much Milwaukee, the Lakers, and the Clippers cared. So I watched the Lakers in the regular season.
Yeah.
And then I watched the Lakers in the bubble. And my thing is, are these real Laker problems or is this bubble apathy? Laker, like, what is it?
I'm right there with you, Colin, but I don't have the answer, and I'm not totally sold on the idea that it's pure apathy because of the age of this team.
Yeah.
And because chemistry was such an important part, and because the shooting has been so bad. If look, their defense has been atrocious, and I could credit that to apathy. But when you're missing wide open threes, when Danny Green can't hit a three, that to me raises the question, is it just harder for them to get their engines going?
Yeah.
And have they not been able to do that? And that synchronicity that they found during the regular season, are they having trouble getting back to that in spite of the secret workouts in LeBron James's laboratory during the shutdown? Oh, we weren't supposed to talk about that. I'm sorry. Forgot I said that. No, but look, when it comes to that whole Lakers Blazers matchup, the Blazers are going to be what the Blazers are, and they can score. They can't defend. And so if the Lakers can't shoot from three and they're playing defense as atrociously as they have.
Yeah.
And it's not apathy, then the Blazers can win that series. If the Lakers get back, if this was just apathy or, you know, we're just rolling into it because we didn't have a whole lot to play for, then this is not going to be a long series. But I honestly, until I see the Lakers play, I'll be very interested to watch this first game. That will tell us a lot about whether this was just the Lakers just laying it down until it mattered or whether there's a real issue here in terms of them getting their engine started again.
Okay, so sports change, analytics change. And like in the NFL, almost everybody outside of the Colts and Phillip Rivers wants a quarterback. You can move the pocket. We're looking for quarterbacks who can really, the game is changing. You can't hit a quarterback. Let's get athletic guys. In basketball, I grew up in a world of bigs. But you start adding up all the big playoff wins for Embiid and Karl Anthony Towns and some of the bigs around the NBA. And I'm like,
Nikola Jokic hasn't done enough yet.
How about Anthony Davis? Like, where are all the wins? So I watch Embiid and the Celtics last night, and my takeaway is this is why bigs turn me off. He didn't get shots. They didn't have the distributor to get him the ball. This is why I would trade Embiid and not Simmons. Simmons controls the tempo, controls distribution, controls the game, can get the ball to three-point shooters. Embiid last night is sitting there, hello, best player on the floor. They can't get him the ball. I mean, this is why I don't think it's a center league anymore. It's just too fast, your takeaway.
Yeah, I believe, well, first of all, you can't simply have just a big, because in game, in need situations, somebody has to be able to get him the ball, and you can make it difficult for a team to get the ball to their best player if it is indeed a center or a big. But I'm not giving Embiid the out on that, because you saw him at the beginning of this game. He was dominant. The dude is not in shape. I don't know that he's ever been in shape. And he didn't get the ball because he didn't want the ball. Look, there's a body language for guys who are demanding the ball. Shaquille O'Neal wanted the ball, and you were in trouble if you didn't get it to him. So I'm not giving Embiid that out. The trick for teams right now with bigs is you still need big men. You need rim protectors, but they have to be agile and they have to be in shape. And they have to have the skills of a smaller player. Embiid has that. He can shoot the three. He can put the ball on the floor. He just can't do it beyond 20, 25 minutes. And he certainly can't do it in the last five. But I've never seen him in great shape. Yeah. And so that's my question, because Ben Simmons is not exactly a dominant guy in the last couple of minutes of the game either. And that's the Achilles heel of this Philadelphia team, is you have two great talents that should be able to dominate their position, but for one reason or another, they can't and they haven't. And I don't see that changing. So that's the key, is, you know, whoever your best player is, you better hope or better know that they are going to be your hardest worker and that you can count on them in the last 2 minutes of a game. It's the distinction between them and Damian Lillard. Damian Lillard doesn't have the physical advantage that Embiid or Ben Simmons have, but you know he's going to be in shape. You know he's going to be fearless at the end, and he's found a way to maximize what he can do physically in order to lead his team. And that makes all the difference in the world.
So our NBA playoffs are underway. It's a whole lot of fun. It was great yesterday afternoon and night. Rick Bucher, good talking to you, buddy.
You got it, Colin.
Desmond Mason played at Oklahoma State, and a friend of Doug Gottlieb, he's also going to talk about OKC and Houston play. Is that tonight? We get that one tonight. Oh, my gosh. That's got...
Yeah, Magic, Bucks, Heat, Pacers, Thunder, Rockets, Blazers, Lakers today.
All right. All right. Coming up next, Nick Saban said something, and it's about the difference between freedoms and privileges. And I think this country, there's percentages of people who just can't figure this mask thing out, and it's not really difficult. And Nick Saban laid down the law. That's coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I always eye roll to people. I won't wear a mask. Personal freedoms. It's my right. No, cowboy. It's a privilege, right, in this country. People can't even get the First Amendment right, which is sad, but the First Amendment doesn't give you the right to say anything anywhere. No. I can't say anything anywhere here. Now, the First Amendment means your speech can't be suppressed by the government. It's called the White House and stuff. But doesn't give you a right to say whatever you want without repercussions. I could be fired today for saying the wrong thing. It's not overly complicated. You don't have a lot of rights in America. You have privileges. You can't smoke on a plane. They took that right away from you. It was privilege. You can't drink in a lot of places. There are counties in America that are dry counties in an entire county. Texas is a place they love their beer. Can't buy liquor in the state of Texas on Sunday at a liquor store or a grocery store. Can't buy your liquor in Texas. That's one of them there states that's got all sorts of rights. You know, it's privileges. They could reduce Saturday alcohol sales if they wanted to as well. Thursday, Friday, they could do all of it. There are counties you can't ever do it. These are all privileges. Even the freedom of speech thing is not about what you think it is in many cases. That's just the government can't suppress us. And so when I hear people talk about, I get this right. Just think about alcohol for a second. The government will regulate how much alcohol you can have in an alcoholic drink. Then they'll regulate when you can buy it. They'll regulate where you can drink it. And they'll regulate the days you can purchase it. And then when you get in your car, if you've had too much of it, they'll regulate you going to jail or not going to jail. Alcohol is completely regulated. That's just alcohol. Everything's regulated. Nick Saban's talking about that wearing mask thing. It's not real difficult. It's not just about you. It's about others. Here's Nick Saban.
I think democracy is great, and I think people that have all these freedoms, I think that's all great. But I think there's one thing that is probably a common denominator that really makes all that work, and that's that people have great moral integrity in the choices and decisions that they make. And you know, I'm not criticizing anybody here, but a lot of people have asked that we wear masks when we're in public, when we're in crowds, when we're in large groups of people, that we keep social distanced. And I don't think they're doing that just for the heck of it. I think there's a reason for it. We're trying to control the spread of this disease.
Yes, a smart man, successful smart man's kind of figured it out. Hopefully all the students at the Alabama can figure it out too. Stop telling me you have all these rights. They're privileges. They can be taken at any time. And even the ones we have, the Constitution, have been amended 27 times. Wear a mask. Don't be stupid. I will say this, though. I have been wearing a mask from, the very beginning, socially distancing. So is Joy. So is Goulet. I'm not an epidemiologist. It seems to me it's harder to get outside than inside. It seems like in churches, meatpacking plants, jails, multi-generational buildings, small space, a lot of people, much easier to get than outside. How do I know that? Because I live in a beach town. We've had it since December, and we've had like 200 cases, and everybody's outside, and some have masks and some don't. They're next to each other on a beach, and we'd be overwhelmed if you could catch it outside as easily as you could catch it inside. I don't think you can. But I will say this. Now, we have to be honest about this, is that I have been checking for the last, probably 2-3 weeks. I go online. It's called Twitter. And they'll have these reports about Alabama and Michigan and Ohio State and all these places testing their athletes. And it's remarkable in almost, all of them, all these top 10, 15 programs, USC, Texas, I've watched all of them. They may have a mini outbreak, but they'll have hundreds of tests and 3 positives. Hundreds of tests for athletes, 3 positives. Yet at North Carolina over the last 2 days, they brought the students on campus for a couple days and they had a massive explosion of cases. You can no longer argue that athletes are in grave danger on college campuses, but the student body's not. No. You've got an agenda. I get it. You hate the president. Whatevs. The athletes are getting tested more regularly. They're surrounded by medical personnel. Athletes are safer than non-athletes. Carolina is a great example. They're on campus for a week. The whole damn thing blew up. Football team at Carolina is testing every day. They're not having the positive test rate. So that part I'm done arguing about. Now, if you want college football or don't, I'd prefer to have college football, but I get it. We had David Shawn yesterday. We don't have all the answers. I get it. But the argument here that, everybody, I hear this whole, they have this new heart inflammation concern. Well, that's been around for 7 months. Still no kids under 17 dying. That thing's, NFL guys can get that. Basketball players can get that. Hockey guys can get that. Soccer guys can get that. UFC guys can get that. Like, if you don't want to put kids in college who aren't getting paid at risk, and it's a moral thing for you, I get it. I'm not going to argue off that ledge. I'm not. I get it. If you and I have a collective bargaining agreement, like in the NFL or the NBA, we collectively bargain. I'll play with this thing. I have the right to opt out. But if I play and get sick, I can't sue you. I'm all for that. Now, you may say, hey, these kids aren't getting paid. This is unfair. I get that argument. That's a real argument. But colleges do allow you to opt out. You're not going to lose your scholarship. You're not going to lose your place in line. Colleges are saying, listen, man, if you're too big, or you got medical stuff, opt out. So they're not forcing you to play. But we got to get past this whole, there's another thing going on in sports that nobody is talking about, and it's real. When you're an athlete, Joy's been a college athlete. I'm a crappy high school one. There is peer pressure. You are part of a group. And you don't want to let your teammates down. That's not the way campus is. That's not the way campus is. Okay, maybe you're at a sorority. They've had huge outbreaks at sororities and fraternities. That's about as close as you get. But when you're on an athletic team, the Cleveland Indians had a pitcher that snuck out and lied to the team and went out. I don't even think he got COVID. And his teammates called him out in the press. What are you doing? What are you doing? One of the great things about sports, and parents will tell you this, it creates a bond that you, this is one of the reasons I like my daughter playing basketball when she was young. You're part of a collective. It's not about you. It's about the team. And you have to sacrifice and you have to give and hard work is rewarded. And it's not always about you getting the accomplishments on Instagram. It's about passing and distributing and elevating others beyond yourself. And that is a real thing in sports. You don't see it much in politics where everybody's out to win the campaign. You don't see it a lot in American business where everybody's climbing the corporate ladder. But in American sports, at the high school and college level, there is a peer pressure to not let down teammates, not let down coaches. It is a collective. It's not about individual. Even if you're a fighter and you think to yourself, it's about me. No. Your trainers, your cut man, the people that have sponsored you, you're part of a collective. And when you watch these college athletes, tip of the cap to these universities, they're testing them. And these kids, very few positive tests. The rest of the campus, fingers crossed, because I don't sense that peer pressure, and Carolina's an example. Hour 2 coming up. Desmond Mason, Rockets, Thunder. We got an upset.